Accession number 20596, Reel 1.
Mr. Somerset, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Oxford.
Which year was this?
1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Oxford?
Yes. Well, no, not my schooling. I went away to school, but I lived in Oxford till I was 21.
Where did you go away to school to?
I went, and my prep school was Swanbourne House, which was, I suppose the nearest town was Winslow. Now, I know it's postcode as Milton Keynes, but of course that didn't exist in the 1930s.
And after prep school?
And after that I went to Marlborough.
What had you intended as a career when you went to Marlborough?
When I went to Marlborough, I had no intentions. And of course, when I left Marlborough, it was the middle of the war. So, one could defer one's decisions until then. I mean, one didn't know where one would be at the end of the war.
Before you went into the army, were you in any bombing of England by the German Air Force?
No, Oxford was completely spared from bombing. I mean, we didn't even get any mistakes.
What was life like at Marlborough during the war?
We were short of food because, in a family, you all got the same rations. Food gets sort of shared out. But with boys 13 to 18, you're all... I mean, that's a hungry age. Yes, we were hungry. I put on a stone and a half, I think, in my first year in the army, because army rations are very much better than civilian rations.
How was the actual education affected by war?
Oh, not. No, I don't think it was affected. looking back, the curious thing at Marlborough was that the City of London School evacuated to Marlborough, and somehow or other they used our classrooms and our playing fields without inconvenience, and our doubtless our chapel, without inconveniencing us at all. They must have had, I would have thought, a very inconvenient timetable. I don't know how many of them there were. And I've never spoken to anyone who was in the CNS, but looking back, they must have had a very difficult timetable. I don't remember Marlborough making any concessions on their timetable.
How did pupils from the two schools get on with each other?
We had very little contact with them. No, there were certainly no problems that I'm aware of, but I can't remember the name of any boy from the CLS.
Any bombs fell on the school?
No, we used to go down, we used to get air raids, and we had rather cellars. Most of the buildings, most of the buildings in the 19th century. And I suppose in those days, the buildings had cellars as a way of defeating the damp, wasn't it? I think we had very good cellars, we used to go down there. But no bombs fell on Marlborough that I'm aware of. We did a little home guarding, of course. I remember the summer of 19... I was just too young to be in the Home Guard then, but the summer of 1940, I was in the History 6th, and most of them were a bit older than me, and they were all in the Home Guard, and they used to come in to the History Library, which was and the History Formery, which was the Brad Lyon in those days, and pile their rifles, you know, a little triangle. Pile their rifles, and the history master Hubert Wiley, much revered, used to lecture. And those who'd been on guard all night used to fall asleep at their desks. You know, we were supposed to be taking notes, but they just went down.
Were you in the Home Guard yourself?
I wasn't in the Home Guard that summer when it really sort of mattered. I was in the Home Guard subsequently, as soon as I was 17, but I wasn't 17 until the end of the excitement really of 1940, the summer of 1940, were really over by the time I was 17, the Battle of Britain and so on. Yes, I was subsequently in the Home Guard, but really by the winter of 40-41, the risk of invasion had passed, really, hadn't it?
Did you get much military training in the LDV?
Yes, and of course you got even more in the Corps. Marlborough was perhaps not so military a school as Wellington or Cheltenham. Many sons of army officers. It was a military sort of school in that way. Yes, the Corps was taken very seriously, even before the war, and even more seriously in once the war started. I think our Home Guard. Have you come across a thing called the Northover Projector?
Vaguely.
Yes. And then there was a thing called the Blacker Bombard, which really was a... Have you met that?
I've heard these names.
Well, the Blacker Bombard was... I should think it was, would have knocked a dozen peats into a cocked hat. It was low on the ground with a sort of, like other anti-tank weapons, with a sort of wavy shield. Had a cross as a base, and it was a spigot operated thing, and the bomb, which had a range of 200-300 yards, I think, weighed, I think 20 pounds, a hollow charge. It was much heavier than a peat in that you had to take it to pieces and put it in position. But once in position, it was very easy to camouflage because the thing was only about 2 feet high, and it fired this 20-pound hollow charge bomb. You had a rake sight so that you could aim off. And the only time we actually got hold of dummy bombs and somebody brave enough to tow a target, we did hit the target. I mean, he was trailing he had some sort of agricultural trailer on the end of about a 20-yard rope, dragged this across our front. I remember we sort of hit about 200 yards. We were able to wallop this bomb into the sort of canvas. It was an anti-tank weapon for a fixed position. I think it would have been very effective. It's a huge bomb. Do see if they've got one tucked away, a Blacker Bombard.
Maybe they have.
Yes. The Northover Projector was a much more primitive thing. It was a drain pipe, and it just fired a bottle of I suppose somehow a mixture of phosphorus and petrol, is that sort of possible? Or perhaps the phosphorus was in one container and the petrol in another. And you had some sort of gunpowder charge, which threw this thing out. I don't think it went range of more than 100 yards, hit the tank and burst into flames. I mean, it would have been quite a nasty thing, I would imagine, for anyone in a tank. It was much more mobile than a Blacker bombard. Those are the two weapons I remember in the Home Guard. Of course, in the Corps, all our weapons were up to Dunkirk, were the old SMLE Mark III, and all those had to go. And we got the American equivalent of that. What was it anyway? The P-14. It was. It was a longer rifle. It was 303. It was heavier. But it wasn't quite as handy as the old SMLE Mark III. The other thing we had in the Corps, we had marvellous warrant officers. I think this is probably common to all public schools. First World War, you know, Monstar men. And I suppose it was rather a nice job for a retired RSM or RQMS. Because they kept everything military, they looked after the armoury, and we had a band, of course, as well. We had a bandmaster, also, of course, from the army. Brain and Shaw, those two lovely men. They called you sir, and I call you sir, and you call me sir. And the other thing at Marlborough, we were very, very keen on shooting. So our ex-army warrant officers always had to be very good shots, because we were always trying. I don't think we actually won the Ashburton Field when I was there, but we were always aiming to win it. We were always fairly high up in the order of Ashburton Field.
Did you see anything of the Battle of Britain?
No. Nothing at all.
No dogfights?
No. Certainly didn't occur over Marlborough, and certainly didn't occur over Oxford, no. I went up to that August 1940. I was helping on a farm up in Cumberland, actually, most of the time, so we were even further away from the fighting. It was.
Was that part of the war effort?
I suppose so. Helping with the harvest, cutting the thistles and so on.
Can you tell me about joining the army, please?
Yes. I wanted to volunteer and was discouraged. The army really weren't terribly keen on volunteers. This was 18 at the end of 1941. So I stayed at school. I stayed at school as long as I normally would have done, which was until, in those days, children stayed at school rather longer, until I was 18 and a half in the July 42, and I received my call-up papers, I think almost the next day, and joined the army very early in August, about a week later. And one of the merits of a public school in those days was that going in the ranks in the army was really involved virtually no change to your lifestyle whatsoever, except that you got rather more food in the army. Now, we did, in those days, schools, public schools, were very regimented institutions. I remember the chaps I joined up with, they hadn't been away from home and on the whole were very unhappy and talking about leave. To me it seemed sort of perfectly normal that I wouldn't be home for another 3 months, that sort of thing. We went down to what's called PTC, I think it was called, Primary Training Centre at Bodmin. And it was really cunningly organised. Our hut was very nearly a mile from the gate. So though there was no prohibition on going out, it wasn't very easy to get out, because you walked down to the gate and you inspected before you went out. And the guard had only got to find something wrong with you. And you had to march back to your hut, put it right. And it gave you 2 miles walk while you thought about whether it was really worth going out or not. Now, in a guard's regiment, it would have been you wouldn't have been allowed out for the first 6 weeks, lest you disgrace the regiment by your unsoldierly appearance. Well, it was more discreetly done at Bodmin, but I think when I was there 6 weeks that I did at the PTC at Bodmin, I think I only actually left the camp once.
What did you think to the training that you got?
It was all right. I don't know if I learnt much that I didn't already know. It was purely rifle, Bren gun, and I was very familiar with both of those, because rifle from the very beginning of the OTC and Bren gun Bren gun from the OTC. We had in the Home Guard we had Lewis guns. Remember now, I don't think we were taught about mortars at all. I think it was just rifle and Bren gun and basic drill. That was all just sort of trying to turn us all into soldiers, I think. Did a bit of cross-country running and a bit of boxing.
And after Bodmin?
Well, after Bodmin, I'd always wanted to go in the infantry, but the infantry at that time was full up. And while we were at Bodmin, we had really quite, I think, well-designed things. They weren't called intelligence tests, or anything. They were called aptitude tests, which is what they were. Give me an obvious example. To find out whether someone was a potential signaller, they just gave you groups. I listened to groups of da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. Is that the same or different as the previous group to find out whether a man was potential signaller? I was to be a gunner. So off I went to a training, 25-pounder field training regiment in Newtown, in what was then Montgomeryshire. And there I did, I don't know, another couple of months, I suppose, learning about 25-pounders. I think that it's easier, really, in a way, to train people for the to train artillerymen than it is infantrymen, because the gun drill that you do is actually what you do in action. Obviously it's easier when you do the drill on a tarmac square, but the actual sort of process of laying recording zero lines and laying a gun, the same whether you're on the square at Newtown or whether in the Western Desert. Same procedure. In fact, at the end of our training at Newtown, we were supposed to go off to somewhere in Wales, somewhere else in Wales, they called Trosfinny, that's as near as I can get the pronunciation of it, to do a bit of field firing. They actually fired these guns, you see. And something went wrong, and we never went to Trosfinny. And so I had never fired a 25-pounder until after the European War was over. I was down at School of Infantry at Warminster, and we found that we had a complete section of ex-gunners. And when we were doing an exercise out at Lark Hill, we seized on a 25-pounder, well, with the approval of the crew. Somebody acted as number one, somebody acted as number three, the layer, and then the only name. The only time I've ever actually fired a 25-pounder, in spite of having been through all the training, I never actually fired one until I was at the School of Infantry.
So that was at Newtown, Montgomeryshire?
Yes.
For about how long was that?
About, just been there 2 or 3 months. And while I was there, I was asked if I'd go to a WASB, a War Office Selection Board. And I think my WASB was somewhere near Chester. So I went there, and when I came back, they said that remember my troop commander, Patrick, well, he was troop commander, right? Somerset, you've been accepted for the infantry. With a great sort of, certainly wouldn't have you in the gunners. I think they're probably quite right, too. There was a certain amount of mathematics involved in gunnery. So off I went to a pre-OCTU, as it was called, at Rootham in the North Downs. And that was a very uncomfortable place, intended, I think, to be uncomfortable. And those who had been gunners or cavalrymen, or indeed any arm except infantry, were then put through another primary infantry training course. Well, this was rather, I'd been here before, as it were, in the Corps, and my main recollection of Rootham is running up and down hills in sort of January and February. Oh, that, not, the army was sort of very, very get fit in those days. The only useful thing I did, actually, was, from my point of view, was we had a motorcycle course. And we also had an MT driving Bedford 3000 weight driving. Because it was wartime, many of us, myself included, couldn't drive. I mean, we had to be taught to drive. That was quite fun, the motor. The motorcycle, I can recall now the motorcycle instructors. They were old sort of dirt track men. They were professionals, and of course they used to get rather fed up with the way we handle these motorbikes, and particularly our lack of understanding of the engine. Change down, can't you? Can't you hear it pinking like buggery. I can just hear this man, this corporal, who'd been driving motorbikes sort of all his life and couldn't bear to have the engine spoilt. Well, after Rutan, I went to a really jammy octo, 166 Douglas Isleman, and we suffered there from something which must have affected all military training in the Second War, and that was the lack of instructors with active service experience. With one exception, all the instructors that I came across at 166 Octu were admirable men, schoolmasters and so on, who had not seen any active service and were very unlikely to. The exception was my company commander, who was a regular Lancashire Fusiliers, named something like Willett, I think his name was. He'd had an MC in Belgium in 1940, but otherwise they were as green as we were. And the Isle of Man, I think, particularly unfortunate. It was a delightful place to be. There was lots of food and so on, and there were all the sort of peacetime entertainments in the way of cinemas and palais de danse and so on. But if the last war was supposed to involve cooperation of infantry, artillery, and armour, there was no artillery on the island. There was no armour, of course, and the heaviest weapon we ever saw was a 3-inch mortar. This was a sort of lack of, there was a grave lack, looking back, there was a grave lack of realism in the training. Anyway, well, while I was there, I volunteered for the, trying to form an airborne division. And I volunteered for that, and feeling a bit airborne on a short course, I broke my ankle jumping off a wall with a Bren gun cradled in my arms. It was quite a high wall, I think it was about 15 feet. And it would have been all right if the ground below had been as muddy as it had been when the course was built. By the summer, it was too hard, and I broke an ankle.
Where was this?
This was in the Isle of Man, somewhere. I can't remember wherever the assault course was. Well, the octu was at Douglas. And we used to go out for exercises from Douglas to all over the island. And that breaking of the ankle put me back a company, because it was quite a long time before it was sort of repaired. In a naval hospital, actually. That was the service hospital in Douglas was a naval hospital. The other thing I remember was quite to do with the war, nothing to do with the army, was Douglas, there were a lot of poor, sad Germans in Douglas who'd been interned. The majority, I think, were quite harmless and were subsequently let out, but they were sort of sad figures in Homburg hats, sort of kept behind sort of wire. I remember they were sort of up the road from the hotels in which we used to live. So, as a result, I was 5 months at Octu instead of 4. So I wasn't commissioned until August 43. And of course had to change a company in the middle, which was one had made friends by then in the other company. Then the odd thing in the last war of officers was that there seemed to be no system about what regiment you were commissioned into. I said, could I go in the